Welcome to Resilient Faith, the podcast. Opportunities to find deeper resilience within ourselves can come when life seems most challenging. This podcast is to help you develop that resilience and connection with God. Being resilient and having power starts with faith. Welcome, friends, to another episode of the Resilient Faith Podcast. We have been doing a series interviewing our mission partners and hearing their fascinating stories and also the ways that we can continue to partner with them in service. And today we are talking with The Giving Spirit. This is a longtime mission partner of Brentwood Presbyterian Church. And I'm excited to jump in with Tim Ingram and hear more about what is going on at The Giving Spirit. So welcome, Tim.
Thank you. Appreciate being here and happy to talk with you today.
Wonderful. So why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself? What's your position at The Giving Spirit? What do you do there? And give us a little bit of background and history of the organization.
Okay. Of course, my name is Tim Ingram. I'm operations director for The Giving Spirit. I've over the years held many jobs with The Giving Spirit, both as a volunteer and professionally. I began about 2003, but the organization actually began in 1999. As many of you might know who would be watching this, it was started by Tom Bagamani. He founded the organization in 1999. I think there were a total of four. There were three other volunteers put together 40 shopping bags, put stuff in it that homeless would need, hygiene, food, things like that, drinks, of course, and took them out to the street and distributed them. And of course, the discovery was pretty quick about how much folks on the street needed this stuff, how much they appreciated the engagement, the connection, and of course, the thoughtfulness. And I think from there, Tom just realized, you know, there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. And from that point, we just kept right on going. Each year got a little larger to the point where in 2019, this is many years later, 20 years later, in fact, we built about 6,000 kits. A total of 3,000 summer backpack kits and 3,000 duffel bag kits. And we're able to distribute all those. Of course, that was pre-pandemic, but in the process of those years, you saw how much it grew, and also what we were able to put in these survival kits also grew. But I think the fundamental key to the growth and to the interest and what kept people coming and volunteering and kept people wanting to distribute the kits year after year and bringing their families, engaging all parts of our community from young to old to every kind of background, it was that idea of course, helping people in desperate and difficult situations, but also just the connection, especially for those people who went out. I think that is really what spurred so many people to continue on with Giving Spirit, and really is the magic of the Giving Spirit. It's what holds it together. I do want to say that during that period, growth could not have happened without Brentwood Presbyterian Church. And I mean that sincerely. I know I can say that on behalf of Tom. I think the first time that I did it, I can still remember sitting in a courtyard and our little assembly line went through room 121 and through the courtyard, and Tom sitting us down. This was 2003, and teaching all 50 of us. That's how many we had. We built, I think, 600 duffel bag kits that year and distributed all on that day. But Tom sitting us down and telling us, you know, this is how you approach homeless. This is how you talk to folks. This is how you make a difference and engage people, and all the warning signs, you know, be careful, all those things that you have to be aware of when you're going out. But from that time on, Brentwood played a crucial role in helping the Giving Spirit grow and helping us serve. Right now, we're about 88,000 that we've served since then. So, that's where
we are. So let me jump in, Tim. You just covered a lot in a short period of time, but going back to 1999, which is when this organization started, and my understanding is Tom started it out of Brentwood Presbyterian Church. Is that correct?
Yes, they actually assembled the items in someone's apartment, believe it or not, on Sawtelle, and then they came down to the church and worked out of the church. So I think there's the combination of the founding, but also all the planning was done there, and they would work out of the I think room 121. But anyway, they met at the church to get things done. So really, it started at the church.
Yeah, and what was the impetus? So the purpose of the Giving Spirit is to assemble these survival kits for people who are living on the street. And we know that in Los Angeles now, the conversations around homelessness are a top priority for our county, for our government, for when we talk about mission at the church. So much of it revolves around this crisis that we're facing around homelessness. But this is not a new problem. It's been going on for decades. And as you say, even the need for this that was present even 23, 24 years ago. But what was it about the homeless crisis at that time that really made this the priority for the organization to say, this is why we're going to do this?
You bring up a good point about the difference between, say, 20 years ago, especially when I came on board, but even before when Tom started. Homelessness was there, it was noticed, and everybody go, wow, there are so many homeless people here, and then walk on. I think when Tom started this, it's unacknowledged as what a big problem it was. And it didn't seem, people were concerned about it, not like they are today. It was not a top issue. Today, I would say it's the number one issue, and the mayor's race showed that.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yes, and back then, though, it was acknowledged but unacknowledged issue. Everybody just kind of thought it was going to be swept under the rug or somebody else should do something about it. And I think that's the key to Tom's leadership and for insight and foresight to see, this is a humanitarian problem. It needs to be addressed. And maybe we're small, but we're going to try to address it the best way we can and as much as possible. But also it was about recognizing them as human beings. They'd be treated as our fellow human beings, or we're not going to solve this problem.
Right. And so much of the foundation of what the Giving Spirit does, it's not just assembling these survival kits, but it's the delivery of them. It's actually taking them out to the streets, to the people who need them, and having conversations. So can you say a little bit more about that? You touched on that earlier, the relationship piece. Can you say a little more about that?
Yes, I think, in my mind, it's why I do it. It's when I did that and I went out and it's about the connection with folks. The first thing is how much they appreciate it, and it's visible. Once you get past that difficult relationship, that immediate moment when you are able to break the ice and they realize you're just giving them something without expecting anything back, it changes everything. They really appreciate what you're doing, but also it was how much they needed it. Then the conversation you heard their stories and you started to realize, and Tom had told us this, but you have to go out and see it for yourself. And I was a bit skeptical myself, but I hear this from everyone. You hear those stories about, I got sick and had to stay in the hospital a couple of months. Now I'm out here. I lost a loved one and I couldn't handle it. Went into a deep depression. Now I'm out here. There's many stories like that. Some guys, I did a bad thing. I got incarcerated. Now I'm out here. I got addicted to drugs. Now I'm out here. Sure, they're those kind of problems. Not always the best choices by people, stuff like that. But for so many of them, it really is the economic hardship that comes into play and our lack of a safety net. For some, maybe they just made some really poor choices, but I think that's much smaller. And quite frankly, from my perspective, that doesn't make any difference. They still need help. That's what hooked me into it. And I hate to use that word hook. It's my inspiration for me to do the work I do. But also I think that's true of many, many other people.
I agree. And I've heard so many stories about the life-changing process of actually going out to deliver these kits. Now, COVID changed so many things for so many people. One of the ways that COVID affected the Giving Spirit was that it affected the way that y'all were able to assemble the kits and also affected the way that y'all were able to deliver the kits. But here we are almost almost exactly 3 years later. So speak a little bit about how COVID impacted your organization.
Well, like it impacted us like everyone else. We did find out pretty quickly when we got, you know, in 2020, when it came on full steam, we did find out pretty quickly that we could be considered an essential business because of the kind of work we did. And then we were able to, through a connection with Mike Bonin, Councilman Mike Bonin at the time from the, he represented the 11th District, which Brentwood is in, provided a space for us at the Westchester Municipal Building. Those two things, you know, propelled us to say, look, we can make these, continue to make these kits. We have to figure out a way to do it where we're spaced out, where it's safe as possible. And we went ahead on that formula. We just spread everything out a lot more is what it boiled down to. But then we, Tom actually came up with a great idea. I came up with the idea, we need to hire temp workers because we understand that volunteers don't really want to come. And we can't blame them. We don't want to endanger anybody. We don't want people to come volunteer. So we said, why don't, and Tom said, well, let's hire temp workers from Chrysalis, who often are homeless folks themselves.
Can you speak to what Chrysalis is?
Yes, Chrysalis is many things, but it helps. It was founded by a priest many years ago in the 70s, right on Skid Row, and is no longer affiliated with the Catholic Church. It's a nonprofit on its own, but they do a lot of work helping poor folks and homeless as well, develop resumes, do job training, learn how to contact employers, learn how to dress, all that stuff, all those little practical things that get lost along the way that help folks get back on the street. It's one of the many things they do. They'll help folks with housing and drug addiction problems, things like that as well.
It was a nice way for y'all to partner together.
Yes.
During this difficult time.
And we felt like we were helping a lot of people needed jobs because of course jobs, there's a lot of problems with unemployment. But also in the area that we're trying to help people as well. So I met a few people that were living in shelters who came there, worked for Chrysalis and helped us out. But the bottom line, we were able to keep producing. And as far as distribution was concerned, obviously we could not go out. It was not safe to go out and distribute directly, but we were able to distribute through agencies. And agencies would come and pick up the what we produced. We did about 10,000. Amazingly enough, we did huge numbers, 10,000 care kits, which were welcome kits that went to Project Room Key. About half of them went there. Many others went to other churches and a whole host of folks. We also did companion animal kits. We did kits for women, which were very popular, about 3,000, believe it or not. And LASA helped us. LASA being Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority helped us distribute those. So we were able to get agencies involved, and they were very happy that we were doing it, and I had no problem coming and getting it. It turned out to be successful.
That's wonderful. So really, it was an opportunity for the Giving Spirit to partner with these other nonprofits who are also serving the vulnerable in our communities to serve people during a really challenging.
Yes, it was. And it was very heartening to see, because it was well over 50 agencies of all types, you know, government, of course, churches, other nonprofits. So it was heartening to see how many people were involved in trying to help everyone through this process. But also, you know, they're doing it all the time. So it was a great opportunity for us to get to know others.
That's wonderful. And so give us a current snapshot now of where TGS is now. What's your current projects, or what are the current things that y'all are working on? Do you feel like, how has the organization now changed with COVID? Are you able to go out and make the deliveries in person for the survival kits? What's going on now?
Yes, it was a slow process. I think COVID had the impact of reducing volunteerism, which understandably so. So we're in the slow process. Each event we had in 2022, we seem to get more and more participation and more volunteers coming. We still wanted to follow a lot of rules, safety rules, but slowly we're bringing our volunteer base back, and we're going to expand slowly as we go, just to make sure that we have enough people to get the kits out when we want to build them. I think the other side of the Giving Spirit, which reaches back somewhat to 2016, is the educational aspect of what we do. And we found that it's very important for our volunteers to hear from lived experience, people who are now housed for the most part, discuss what their experiences are. And it really makes it much more tangible to a lot of people, and understanding how important what we do is, how important connecting with folks and treating as human beings makes a difference to them. I can cite several. We have one named Ezzy who has come to many of ours, and Tom literally talked to him, and he was not in a good place. He just didn't think his life was worth living anymore. And Tom, and this was during a normal distribution in December of something like 2015, 14, something like that. But anyway, Ezzy now has a place. He was a veteran. He's doing much better. He got a little bit of help on what some of his challenges were. But I think what Ezzy comes and speaks at these events and talks to folks about what he went through and how important it is to make these kits and make the connection. But it's even important to just say hello to a homeless person when you walk by. You don't have to have an event for it. And the educational part is now, I think, about 50% of what we're doing. And we will not have, we don't have events without educational components to it. Let's put it that way. So
say more about that. What are these educational, what does that mean? What does that look like when you do education alongside the kit assembly, the survival kit assembly and distribution?
Right. The first thing is there's a certain amount of immersive education in just the whole action of what everyone does. So just building the kits and looking and seeing what normal items people need that are essential.
What are some of those items, Tim?
You know, the hygiene items, toothpaste, toothbrushes, lip balm, deodorant. I mean, they seem so obvious, but they're there. Wipes are very important to have out there. Then there's, of course, there's food. It has to be prepackaged because we have to be able to save it or at least make it last a long time. But water is always important. I think lotion is a huge thing. And then, you know, some certain kinds of clothing, the socks. Socks are almost like gold out there. We try to put as many pairs of socks as we can in, usually two or three pairs of socks, gloves, hats. There's so many things that I can't remember them all. In the wintertime, a blanket.
Right, but it's basics, but it's basics for survival.
Yes, and I can't tell you how many times people say there's toothpaste in there and their eyes light up and they actually smile. Or, you know, do you have some water? And they're so happy that we have some water.
So just the assembly itself is educational.
Yes. And then there's, you know, as we talked about before, connection, that's educational. People walk away and go, wow, this is a life changer in a lot of ways for me. Or, you know, they go out with their families and their children change. I won't say change, but they see sides of their children that they haven't seen before. That was a lot of prompted Tom quite a bit to bring in the education because he started realizing the kids were kind of educating the parents and vice versa. I think that's it's healthy in the community for people to even see things among themselves and talk about them, whereas they might not otherwise do that. But also the more formal education is actually having a panels. You have two or three, four people on a particular topic, say women in homelessness. 33% of the homeless are women. It's grown since 2016. It's grown probably about 50%.
Wow.
It's more of a serious problem now. But anyway, they'll have a panel. They'll discuss what those particular issues are and how challenging it is for so many. And causes are often things like domestic violence, things like that. So you get into some difficult areas, but still, it's important for folks to know about that. And often, the education is trying to veer folks away from judging so much.
Right. That's so important.
Yes, and more towards compassion and letting people know this through connection, especially that they can overcome. But that's what a lot of the education is about. Again, it's another way to see them as human, but also some facts put out there about, you know, why people are there, what happens, that sort of thing. So,
right. Because there is so much stigma. There are so many myths. There is so much stereotyping against people experiencing homelessness. So these are really important opportunities to dispel all of that and to bring more compassion and humanization to our neighbors living outside.
Yes, I think that's very much a part of what the educational, one of the chief goals of the educational aspects of what we're doing. We're putting together and developing a curriculum, which would be a program. Both the idea is to have it suitable to classrooms, but also for a family at home, and also for the board, kind of like in business settings, where people can learn about homelessness through a curriculum, which they could, you know, have facts presented to them, go through what it's like to be there, that sort of thing. And then the actionable points at the end, these are things you can do. So that's all the process. Anyway, that's another way to do the education, where people don't necessarily have to come to an event to get that information.
Right. And so where do you see the future of the Giving Spirit? What are the hopes and dreams of the organization? What are y'all working towards next?
Well, that's a great question. I think in some ways we're really excited. In some ways we're kind of daunted. I think we had to take a big breath. And I think all of us had to do this, whatever sphere we're in, whatever life we're leading from the pandemic, to kind of reset and try to understand where we are now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so we've had to do the same thing. And I think we're very much about doing these two pillars, the educational aspect and the outreach aspect, 50-50. We're kind of looking at it in those terms and allocating resources in those ways. So we're not, you know, because of the pandemic, we're having challenges in terms of accurately predicting how many kits we can build and put out there and get out there, and volunteers to support us to do that. So that's one trick on, I say trick, you know, that's one challenge that we have to deal with. But we want to continue with the programs, but we develop programs into separate areas. We have these universal care kits, which is the backpacks and the duffel bags, but we developed a companion animal program. There are 10 to 20% of the folks out there that are homeless have companion animals. A lot of them survive because of those companion animals. They'll put those companion animals.
Yeah, their pets keep them alive.
You don't realize. So it's not that we're trying to help the companion animal. We are. It's really to help that owner, that caretaker. There's also women's and girls. It's grown so much lately that we felt like we had to have a separate program for that. So, and then there's LAUSD homeless students. I don't know if people are aware, but there's probably 20 plus thousand homeless students. I think it's even higher than that, but you can only find out if they self-identify. They have to respect the privacy rules. So we're helping there. We're getting things out like backpacks for them that have school supplies in them. And we're trying to get, in fact, we've already started to get actually flash drives. I realize people don't use flash drives a lot, but if the kids at LAUSD get a Google Drive, get a Chrome, some kind of Chromebook, but they have to hand that Chromebook back in. So they need that drive to hold their information until they get the new Chromebook the next year. So that's just another example.
So it sounds like a lot of it is adapting to, because new needs are always turning up. I mean, the numbers of homeless folks or people experiencing homelessness continues to rise. And with things like the pandemic and COVID and shifting cultures around people experiencing homelessness, I could understand how your organization would constantly have to be adapting and pivoting to try to meet the current needs of the people.
Yes, I think, you know, we're growing and learning, just as all the volunteers are growing and learning all at the same time. And there's always new things that you learn as you go along. And that's, you know, our new programs reflect that, that there are particular areas that you want to focus on because they need that extra focus, both in terms of education, making people aware about, but also the need, helping folks out to get those kind of essentials so they can survive. Let me just say one last thing about what we do. We're the first mile. In the sense of we go out and reach and connect. We don't have the resources to actually get into what, say, LASA does or other outreach groups that actually can move people from the streets to the houses. Of course, we always give them information. We give them an information sheet and cards. There's actually a really cool card. A lot of folks have cell phones out there, believe it or not, but it's a cool card that you can use a QR and access the library. Los Angeles Library has a really nice section where they or very informational section where they have all kinds of outreach numbers and people to contact to get help. So we get that kind of information out there. We do the connection, but the reality is, you know, at the end of the day, it's about affordable housing. We need more affordable housing, but that's not going to happen overnight. And I think, you know, authorities are doing a great job of trying to move ahead of that, recognize that's a problem. But in the meantime, people are going to be out there and they need to survive.
Yeah.
The average age for folks to live out there is still around 49 or 50. That's the estimate. People, unfortunately, almost 2,000 died the last year out on the street. So it's crucial to try to get as much help as you possibly can out there and also make people aware.
Yeah. So how can people get involved with the Giving Spirit, Tim? How can people help out?
Well, we're online. We, of course, putting together our schedule for this year. We're a little bit behind on that, to be honest. The reason also, is, like I talked about before, is we're still adapting to post-COVID life. I say post-COVID with all the hope in the world. Just you can sign up online to get our emails, and we'll put out emails and notices and when we have our events coming up. And you can certainly sign up for those events. Hopefully they'll work out within your schedule. And yes, that's the best way to keep track of us. We're on hashtag the Giving Spirit. We're on Twitter and Instagram as well. So we post periodically there so they can keep up with us there. So and of course you can just email us at info@thegivingspirit.org. And you know, whatever interest you have or whatever you might want to do, especially if you have a project at home or something like that, or in your area or your school wants to do something like that, hopefully maybe we can figure something out. But the last thing I will say, and I should have talked about this before, is one of the best ways we touch people, communicate people, is with handmade friendship cards. Every kit we give out, we put in a handmade friendship card. It goes along with the information that we put in there. And if I can tell a quick story, Kathy Yanamira, who was at BPC at the time, had a Girl Scout troop and said, you know, these Girl Scouts need something to do. And so what should we do? And somehow we came up with this idea, they should just make some cards. So we put the cards in there. We made 200 that year. We put them in the kits. And when I went out and several others, we realized when they opened up those cards, it made a difference. Many of these people are really touched by that. I just gave out a couple duffel bags a week ago on a Saturday with a bunch of teenager kids. And I tell you, the kids would go look at that card and people would pull that card out and just look at it. And it touched them, made a difference. So you can always make friendship cards.
Always make friendship cards. And those friendship cards go inside each survival kit. And that really makes a difference. And it adds a personal touch to the survival kit and says, somebody thought about you, somebody made this for you, you're not forgotten, you're seen, we care about you, and we support you.
All from Girl Scouts, idea from Girl Scouts, and we came this far, so it was wonderful. I mean, but these things happen. We learn as we go along.
That's right. We just never know. It's always, you know, we're always adapting and growing and changing and figuring out what's the next best step that we can do to make a difference in people's lives. Yeah.
Agree with that 100%. That's been my experience. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you sharing more about the Giving Spirit and this organization. And tell us again, how did you get involved in this group?
Tom and I were friends at the gym, of course. You know, how else do you meet in L.A.?
Gym friends. That is very L.A. Gym friends.
What are you doing this weekend? There you go.
Gym friends. I love that. Well, and again, you never know where your gym friends are going to lead you. So, you know, make buddies because you just never know where it's going to lead.
Right. Another reason to work out.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
You've been listening to Resilient Faith, the podcast. Resilient Faith is sponsored by Brentwood Presbyterian Church in West Los Angeles. You can follow our church and this podcast on Facebook at BPC Team and Instagram at BPC_USA. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And thanks for listening.